Support for this KQED podcast comes from Stanford Blood Center. Stanford Blood Center is a proud supporter of KQED and encourages you to support local patients by donating blood. Learn more at bloodcenter.stanford.edu.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our next hour this morning, if you're a working mom who feels guilty for being away from your kids, there's good news. A recent Harvard Business School study shows that women who had mothers in the workforce are more likely to have jobs, to be supervisors with responsibilities, and to earn higher wages than women raised by mothers who stayed at home. Similarly, men who had working mothers are more likely to do household chores and spend more time caring for family members. We'll discuss the latest research on the effect of maternal employment on gender disparities at work and at home. Join us for Forum. It's next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Working mothers, according to a Harvard Business School study, have more successful daughters and more caring sons. The study, based on data from 24 countries, posits that the daughters of working mothers are more likely to be more educated and more likely to be employed and in supervisor positions and to earn more than the daughters of women who don't work outside the home. The research also indicates that the sons of working mothers are more likely to care for family members and to take on household chores than the sons of mothers who don't work. In this Forum Hour, we find out all about the Harvard study, and we want to hear from you. Are you a working mother, or are you a stay-at-home mother? And what are your concerns about the effects on your children, or what effects have you observed that you believe have made or continue to make a difference? Let me tell you who's joining us for the hour. We want to welcome first Elizabeth Long Lingo. She's an assistant teaching professor at Worcester Polytech Institute and that's Worcester Polytech Institute, and co-author of the study, which, by the way, is on our website, and you can get on our website. Its title is Mum's the Word, Cross-National Effects of Maternal Employment on Gender Inequalities at Work and at Home. And Elizabeth Long Lingo, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Kathleen McGinn, who is co-author of the study, Mum's the Word, is a professor of business administration at Harvard Business School and also joins us from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Welcome, Kathleen McGinn.
Thanks, Michael. It's great to be here.
Great to have you here. And we also want to welcome Sarah Damaski, who is Assistant Professor of Labor and Employment Relations and Sociology at Penn State University. She's also author of a book called For the Family, How Class and Gender Shape Women's Work. Thank you for joining us, Sarah Damaski.
Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you. And Kathleen McGinn, let me begin with you, if I may. This is a study, a pretty extensive study, I mentioned 24 countries, and quite international in that sense, but one that should put a lot of working mothers' minds at ease, exonerate them from guilt. It may place maybe perhaps some more guilt on the shoulders of those who are not working. But I'm just wondering at this point if we can lay out what we're talking about here. What we're talking about, sort of the pith of it in many ways, is there are a few things that affect gender inequality more than having a working mother.
So our studies show that there are many things within each country that affect women's success in the workplace and men's contributions at home. But the being raised by a mom who was employed outside the home has a significant effect on top of those things.
And let's talk about that significant effect. I've said earlier that it certainly affects success and jobs and earning power and all the rest of that. But also probably on a broader level, just an ability to be maybe even in some ways a better mother.
So what it drives is people's attitudes about gender, their attitudes about what women are supposed to do, what women might be good at doing, and what men are supposed to do and what men might be good at doing. And so that the effects of being raised by an employed mom work through this change in gender attitudes, what we find is that both sons and daughters of employed moms are much more egalitarian in their views about women's and men's roles at work and at home. And those views translate into the way these sons and daughters then spend their adult lives. So this is partially because watching your mom go to work every day changes your beliefs about what's normal. The other thing that it does is it changes your beliefs about what's expected and what's possible. So if you're raised by a mom who goes to work every day, what you see is that she's shuffling this and she's shuffling that. And so therefore that's possible. And sons who are raised by employed moms end up having to do more work at home because the stay-at-home mom can't be as busy as the employed mom. And so the employed mom asks the kids to join in. And so what we see is both a role modeling effect and a change in attitudes.
And a work ethic, I imagine, too. A work ethic as well as an attitude that comes through or by osmosis along those lines. Elizabeth Longlingo, co-author of the study, let me bring you into this. We've seen some recent statistics that show that there's a doubling of households with women who are sole breadwinners. It's gone from 4 to 8%, and actually about nearly three-quarters of American mothers with children are now employed. I'm wondering about some more research on top of that by the Pew people who say that Pew Research says that 41%, that's pretty significant, of adults say that working mothers are, well, bad for society and not necessarily good for children. How do we correlate that to the work that you've done here?
So we want, I think all moms, all dads want to raise resourceful, kind, resilient, caring kids that can pitch in and that can take responsibility. For me, as a working mom, and also in the evidence of this paper, kind of brought to life in practice, every week my family has a meeting on Sunday. We call it team lingo to talk through the trade-offs. What are we going to need to do to make it happen this week? The unexpected kind of circumstances that arose. And the children get to see how we, my husband and I, how all the children need to pitch in, how we need to be resilient in the face of kind of the unexpected, how to pivot, and the fluidity of roles. And these are all things that our children are going to need as they try to navigate kind of the 21st century economy and as they try to deal with inevitable kind of pitfalls and roadblocks that they'll encounter as adults.
Well, let me get to the study itself to some degree, because when you're talking about working mothers, usually, not always, but you're talking about more education. You're also talking particularly about more resources because there are class and income differences. More resources meaning childcare, which often those in lower income brackets can't afford, and so they can't afford to work, really. Those were pretty much seen as givens in the study?
So the question that we based the findings on is a question that said, did your mother ever work for pay between the time you were born and the time you were 14 years old? So our effects are for moms who were employed at any point in time before their kids were in high school. So it doesn't, this isn't about moms who worked full-time necessarily, although those moms are included. And it's not just about moms who worked part-time or about moms who worked the whole time that their kids were young. And so there's a huge variety of types of employed moms that are included in this study. You're exactly right, though, Michael, that education and employment are correlated. But we do control for the education in the respondents. And what's really interesting is we don't see the same pattern of effect between boys and girls. So if it was just about, well, you're being raised by an employed mom, there's more money in the home, there's more education in the home, therefore kids are just going to do better, you'd expect to see the same pattern of results for boys and girls. Boys would be being paid more too. Boys would be more likely to have supervisory responsibility too. We don't see that at all. It's really about this role modeling and changing of gender attitudes.
You got a lot of different types of work, though, and I'm not sure. Can you quantify the work ethic and the role that plays in this whole equation?
So I wouldn't say it's about work ethic. So I was raised by a stay-at-home mom. I'm one of five kids. I can't imagine a woman with a stronger work ethic than my mother. So it's not about a work ethic. It's about expectations about what you do with that work ethic. So it's changing your expectation about what women do. Women have always worked very, very hard, whether they worked at home, in the family business, or outside of the home. But what these sons and daughters of employed moms are seeing is that it's kind of normal for a mom to go to work.
Again, we're talking with Elizabeth Long Lingo, who is co-author of Mom's the Word, and that is a study that was done out of Harvard that is on our website. Kathleen McGinn, let me go back to you just to find out more about the study, and then we'll talk with Sarah Damasky, who sees perhaps from a different perspective. Originally, I believe, some of this was, or the catalyst to some of this, had to do with a statement that was made by Christine Lagarde of the International Monetary Fund, and we've kind of boiled this global study down into three subdivisions. Can you at least give us information about that?
Sure. So this is Elizabeth. We looked at the labor outcomes for the children as grown adults. And we were also very interested in leadership outcomes as well. And what we found for us, for daughters of mothers who worked outside the home, they had greater supervisory outcomes. And this was not completely explained solely by, not completely explained by gender attitudes. There was something else going on. And we imagine and hypothesize that the mothers are role modeling how to negotiate and navigate the power dynamics at work. Of course, this is just something we're suggesting and is worthy of discussion and analysis further. But there's something beyond just simply shaping the gender attitudes that, yes, you can work, but that they're role modeling how do we navigate these power situations? How do we advocate for ourselves? How do we look for opportunities to advance in a way that perhaps children of stay-at-home mothers, just they don't have that exposure.
Actually, the question, that I wanted to have addressed here, and let me go to Kathleen McGinn on this, was this division into three categories of liberalizing egalitarian countries, countries that are litigating on a moderate level, and what were described, I believe, or characterized as stagnating conservative countries. And it turned out in this that Mexico was more conservative in gender attitudes about women than men. So there are cultural differences that have to be figured in this whole study, I would imagine, Kathleen McGinn, that are quite important.
That's right. There are really important cultural differences. So we do see when we look across the 24 countries, we look at the gender attitudes in 2002 and in 2012, the 2 years when our data were collected by the International Social Survey Program, and we look at how much variation there is in a country around those attitudes, and then we look at how much it's changed across that decade. When we look at those three variables, what the absolute level is in the 2 years, how much variance there is, and how much change there's been over the decade, what we see is that the 24 countries clump together into three clusters. And as you mentioned, there's one of the clusters is what we call the liberalizing egalitarians. These are countries like the Nordic countries that were already pretty liberal in their gender attitudes in 2002, and they just got even more so over the decade. There's another group of countries, the United States is one of these, Spain, Israel, that were relatively moderate. When you looked across the world, or across the 24 countries that we had, what you found is that these countries were kind of around the middle in terms of the gender attitudes in 2002. And across that decade, they just stayed almost exactly the same. Some got a teeny bit more liberal, some got a teeny bit more conservative, but they were stagnating, and we call these the stagnating moderates. And then there's a group of countries, and Mexico is among these, Chile, Russia, where the gender attitudes in 2002 were really conservative, and they continued to be very traditional and very conservative attitudes in 2012, and we call these the stagnating conservatives. So to go to what I think is the real point of your question, our results hold most strongly in those stagnating moderates. Those are countries where there's enough difference within the country about what gender is supposed to mean and about what women and men are supposed to do at work and at home, so that your personal observations as a kid can have a lot of effect. In the liberalizing egalitarians, there were still positive effects in the direction that we saw, but they were smaller because country expects you to go to work if you're a woman, and it expects you to be involved in care if you're a man. In the conservative countries, there were two things going on. Some of these conservative countries were post-Soviet bloc countries where the vast majority of women actually did work. And they're very conservative in the sense that there's not as much room around what women are allowed to or think they're supposed to be doing. We still did see small effects in these countries, and we still saw a large effect for supervisory responsibility for women and a large effect for caregiving for men. But the rest of the effects were much smaller in these really conservative, stagnating countries.
Again, Kathleen McGinn with us from Cambridge is professor of business administration at Harvard Business School. We also have Sarah Damaschke with us, assistant professor of labor and employment relations and sociology at Penn State University, also the author of For the Family, How Class and Gender Shape Women's Work. And Sarah, it used to be that studies were done, especially by sociologists like you, about the harm that was being done to children by working mothers, right?
Well, I wouldn't say by sociologists like me, but
sociologists. I'm sorry to put you in a generic category there. Yeah,
but I would say that there is a particularly large amount of concern, I think, in the 80s and early 90s about what the effect of women's work was on children, and I think that by and large. Most studies found that there were either kind of no effect or kind of a moderate positive effect, as Dr. McGinn and Dr. Long Lingo note in their paper.
But now it seems, according to their research, that there are good effects. And aren't you a little concerned, perhaps, that the effects, wondering whether the study shows if effects can be seen in only a year of work by mothers outside the home?
Well, I will say two things. One, I think that their study is really exciting in a lot of ways, and I think that it should help us to maybe move past this discussion about whether work is good or not good for children. Two, I do think that there is a lot of variation in terms of the mother's working experience, right? And so we know from prior sociological work that what your parents do does matter. It does help shape your attitude as you kind of go forth into the world and make decisions. But we also know that if the only thing that mattered were what your parents did, then we wouldn't be able to explain, say, the gender revolution, right? Because all those women who are entering the workforce in the 70s and 80s and beyond didn't have moms who had worked, right? And so they did something different than their parents had. So it's not simply that what your parents do matters. Other things matter, too.
Well, why do you want to get past the question of whether or not work is positive for children or not positive for children? I'm not sure why we have to get past that.
I think that there's been consistent evidence for the past couple of decades that suggests that at the very least it doesn't do children harm. And at the most, as Dr. McGinn and Dr. Long Lingo's study suggests, that it actually can bring positive benefits. But more than that, I think that kind of focusing on kind of this question of whether work is good or not good for kids is kind of like asking if you should shut the barn door when the horse is out in the pasture already, right?
Well, maybe the real question ought to have, I'm sorry, but that's a good metaphor. In my mind, it sometimes really boils down to a class question as much as a gender question. It's easier for middle-class women to find work, and middle-class women are more likely to work, it seems to me, whereas as I indicated before, a lot of women in what would be called lower class or underserved communities or whatever find that it's impossible to work because the childcare costs are prohibitive.
Right. And I think this is a really important issue, is to think kind of in a long-term way about how women are able to work and how they're able to maintain their employment and how class and education play a huge factor in that. And so one of the things that I find in my research and I talk about in my book is that is that, and to kind of connect it to Dr. McGinn and Dr. Longlingo's work, is that women do develop different attitudes about whether they're going to work. Some women have expectations that they're going to work, and middle-class women are more likely to expect that than working-class women are. Although I would say the exception for that is African-American women, regardless of their class background, are more likely to anticipate working than white or Latina women. But what happens once they enter the workplace is also really important, right? And so I argue that middle-class women end up having more resources. They have more resources to purchase childcare. They have more resources to find someone to help clean at home. They have more resources to expect to work, and I think this maybe connects back to the research as well, so that when they're picking a partner, they maybe pick a partner who's more likely to help out at home too, right? They're picking those sons of the working moms who also expect that they're going to be helping. And so when they get into the workplace and are working, their husbands are more likely to pitch in at home. So all of those things need to kind of happen in order for women to get to some of the supervisory roles that they're talking about, in order for women to stay employed long enough that they are able to get promotions and raise their salary, raise their wage.
Well, we asked a question of our listeners. If your mom had a job when you were young, how did her working shape you? And let me read some of the responses we got on Facebook. Brian says, my mom educated migrant field workers in Monterey County about how to stay healthy while she raised me as a single mother in Salinas. 25 years later, I worked at the state capitol for Assemblymember Richard Pan, the chair of the California Assembly Health Committees, who helped implement Obamacare in California. Thanks, Mom. Renee writes, my mom was a self-employed lawyer getting people supplemental security income benefits, so it meant my dad did most of the child care. This taught me to subvert gender roles, and I'm proud of both my parents. Paul writes, I learned that moms will do what's necessary to make life work, even if that means doing something they don't want to do. In absentia, I learned the value of a parent who wants to take care of his children and be home full time. So when my wife wanted to work at home versus for a corporation, I supported that decision. More of your responses to that question, if your mom had a job when you were young, how did her working shape you? Katie writes, both my parents worked full-time when I was growing up. In addition, my mom went to school to get her master's in library science while raising us. It definitely shaped us. It made me see that with time management, you can do anything you put your mind to. And also, by this example, I learned that education is very important. I also have a master's in library and information science. Joyce writes, I'm the youngest of three girls. My mother got her first job when I was about 11, even though her jobs were fairly low level. Employment gave her some economic power leverage with my father, who was a violent control freak. She felt more able to stand up to him, gave me more material goods, and helped me to go to college, something my father had refused to do. And finally, here's Sherry, who says, if my mom had worked, she might have been less depressed. Maybe we can come back to that question, but let me come back to the fact that you can participate in this discussion and bring your own sentiments and your own experiences in, as well as questions or comments. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. Feel free to join us now at that number. Again, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments you might have right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And of course, you can tweet us, our Twitter handle @KQED Forum, or go to our Facebook page. Talking with the co-authors of Mom's the Word and the author of For the Family, How Class and Gender Shape Women's Work, I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about a new study called Mom's the Word, Cross-National Effects of Maternal Employment on Gender Inequalities at Work and at Home. And you can find that study on our website, kqed.org/forum. And you can also lend your voice to any questions or comments you might have and to this conversation by going to our website or by calling us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. We asked a question of our listeners on social media. If your mom had a job when you were young, how did her working shape you? And one of those comments kind of stays with me here, Sarah Damaski. Sarah Damaski is assistant professor of labor and employment relations and sociology at Pennsylvania State University. That comment from Sherry says, if my mom had worked, she might have been less depressed. Can I get you to reflect a little on that, Sarah?
Yeah, so I've actually done some research with my colleague, Adrian Freck, in which we looked at the relationship between women's employment and their physical and mental health at middle age. And we find that a lot of the things that we've been talking about, like class and education level, impact whether or not you're going to work full-time or if you're going to stay at home full-time. And then we take into consideration those things because they are also likely to impact your health in middle age, and look at, you know, the impact of working. And we find that women who stay at home do have do not have as good mental or physical health as those who work full-time and steadily throughout their adult working years, their 20s, 30s, and early 40s.
Another interesting thing that came to my attention in this study, Elizabeth Longlingo, co-author of the study and assistant teaching professor at Worcester Polytech Institute, is the fact that men all over the world, and this did cover 24 countries, as we've said, about 50,000 people that you talked to, the children of working mothers are simply less likely to stick to traditional roles.
That's right. So they're more likely to adopt a more what's called in kind of the literature, and a more egalitarian attitude about the roles that men and women can embrace. And so for women, to the extent that they're moving away from more traditional models of women, where they would be just staying at home, their job is solely to take care of the home and children, that was kind of provoking that and saying, no, there's other possibilities on the horizon for you. And for men, the whole kind of idea that men were solely the breadwinners and didn't have any time to spend with children at home has completely shifted. That's what we found across all 24 countries, was that the men spent considerably more time on childcare, 7.5 hours per week.
And if I could go back, Kathleen McGinn, to you before we bring our callers and listeners into this discussion. There are certainly the study has a lot to do with gender attitudes and gender ideology and class, as we've been saying. But what about the implications for policy? Were you able to deduce something specific?
We can do that by looking across countries, but it's really backing out. So what we can see is that the effects of a working mom are greater in places where countries don't have practices and facilities in place, where it's a much bigger decision and a much bigger commitment on the part of the family for the woman to go to work. So in the what I called liberalizing egalitarian countries, the Scandinavian countries and some other Northern European countries, where there are lots of national supports for parenting and for both parents working, what you find is that it doesn't take your mom going to work to convince women that they should go to work. That's the capability of going to work is made possible by the policies. So in lots of other countries, if it were easier for women to go to work, this could be a less heartbreaking decision.
I've also got a tweet here from Jeff who wants to know, does when the mom goes to work or stays home until school age only factor in? Kathleen?
So our data don't speak to that because of the generic nature of our question. Sarah's research might have some of when they go to work.
Sarah?
So in my research, I found that that women whose moms worked were more likely to have attitudes that expected they would work too if they had a positive view of their mom's work. So it's less about whether and when the mom was working and more about whether how they viewed that contribution, right? And so in some families, the mom needing to work was almost seen as shameful because it meant the dad wasn't providing for the family. And so in those families, the mom's work was often kind of hidden under the rug. And in some cases, I actually talked to a woman who told me, oh, yeah, my mom didn't work. She just did odd jobs. And I said, well, what does that mean? Well, and it turns out that these odd jobs weren't. She was cleaning houses and doing all this other stuff. I mean, it sounded like she was actually doing a lot of hard physical labor to me once I talked about it. But the family story about it was that she just helped out. And so it wasn't seen as this positive thing. And so I think that kind of the way that the work is viewed is an important component to how it matters in terms of how women form their own expectations about the workforce.
Well, I want to read an email from a listener named Angela before we go to your calls, who writes, "Yes, my mother worked. She was a maid. How did it shape me? Complex. I was molested by a neighbor who knew I was a latchkey kid. I came home to just me, always. I woke up alone, got dressed alone. I went downtown and rode glass elevators, stole money from wishing ponds, bought myself White Castles. I learned how to roll bums by seven." What do you have? Any thoughts from either of the authors of the study when you hear that kind of narrative?
So, Michael, I think this gets directly to your previous question, which was, what are the implications for policy in many families? And this sounds like Gentleman's Family is a good example. If there's only one parent in the home and there aren't resources, either with other family members, with friends, or with money to pay for childcare in the U.S., if a single mom has to go to work, she has to go to work, and the U.S. does not make very many resources available to her so that her kids are safe and secure. What's really interesting and quite counter to this gentleman's story, which it is...
It was a young woman, yeah.
To her story, which is very sad, is that the literature suggests that especially for low-income kids, and this is a meta-analysis over 20 years of research that Sarah mentioned earlier, that meta-analysis suggests that the positive effects of being raised by an employed mom on young kids, so precisely the years that this woman is talking about, those effects are positive and strongest for lowest-income women. For the children of low-income women. So again, this is a very it's a very sad thing that happened. It is not the modal or the most common outcome for children of lower-income employed moms.
Can I follow that up with another quick email, Kathleen? I'd like to get your response. Anne writes, stay-at-home mothers supposed to feel about this research? Isn't it enough that they feel they're not contributing to society? And now with this research, we make them feel even worse. I don't understand the value of this research. Does sending our kids to daycare all day guarantee them better careers? Kathleen?
Sending them to daycare all day may not guarantee them better careers. And in fact, many of these moms who were employed became employed after their kids were already in school. So much of the time that our children are under 14 years old, they're in school a good part of the day. This isn't a statement about the goodness of mothering. It's a statement about what mothers are role modeling. Mothers who are employed are role modeling that it's normal for women to be employed.
And mothers who are not employed are going to feel bad, like that mother does. I mean, that's just the reality of the study. I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry.
One of the really interesting things that we did find, so we looked at whether children of employed moms are happier than children of moms who stayed at home full time. And it turns out the effect is essentially zero. So it is not making your children happier. What it's doing is role modeling a certain kind of life for your children. So if you're a full-time stay-at-home mom and you love being a full-time stay-at-home mom, it's likely that your daughter is going to be a full-time stay-at-home mom too, and she might love that too. This isn't about saying one is better than the other. It's an empirical study saying, what are the effects? And most of the prior research that's been done has looked primarily at young children, the outcomes on young children. As Sarah mentioned, the research suggests that the effects are either neutral or slightly positive. But there's been very little work that looks at the effects on the adult children of employed moms. So the value of the research is to teach us what is the effect. It could have gone the other way, and that would have been important to know too. So it's important to know what the effects are. But again, this isn't saying that employed moms are better moms.
You're both working mothers, though, right?
Role modeling.
Both of you authors of the study are working mothers. Could you keep your own bias out of a study like this?
So the data were collected by an international consortium of 34 countries. We didn't have anything to do with
it. Wait a minute, I thought it was 24. 34?
I thought there were 24. No, you're exactly right. There's 24 countries in our study. The consortium is 34 countries.
The consortium, okay.
We included those 24 because they had the data available, no missing data, et cetera. But we didn't have anything to do with collecting the data. The data were collected by a totally separate body, and so we don't have any way to bias the data. We just run the analyses.
I want to read a couple more comments here and then go to your calls. A listener writes, not to be picky, but all mothers are working mothers. I so dislike women being pitted against each other. Pro-choice means we as women should have the choice to do what works best for us. And Anne says, I agree with everything your guests are saying. I also believe that the children benefit from having a role in how the family manages their daily life, that is, feeling needed in the family and learning valuable skills. Thanks from a retired working mom. Let me get some callers on here, and we go first to Mahi. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I actually was really fascinated by your panel today because I kind of come from a very unique background. I have to make 2 points. One, my mother grew up in a very traditional Muslim Kashmiri family back in the valley. And she came from an intellectual family, so it was easy for her to go to school and college. But she got married through an arranged marriage into a huge joint family system where she had to fight to get a job and stay in her job as a high school science teacher. So when I was born, she was already working, but I had seen her stand up for herself and fight to keep her job because she told me it keeps her safe. It's an opportunity to get out of the house, make her money, stay independent, give her confidence that she can fight it. And she's, I think, been my hero. And also, without realizing, I have picked up a lot of her in her multitasking, in her staying calm under pressure, all those qualities. And I think she has set an example that I don't think I would have ever had an opportunity to follow otherwise.
I'm so glad you called, Mahi, because I think there are many who come from traditional families like you who face the adversity often. I don't know that this was a case in your family. I'm not saying it was. But, you know, patriarchy, fathers, husbands who don't want their wives or their daughters to work.
Grandfather was a known patriarch of the family. You had to, even me as a kid, when I was 4 or 5, I had to ask him for permission to go places.
Yeah.
But that said, I had a support system. My mom did. So she was in a joint family system. She fought it and got a job. But I also didn't come home to an empty house ever. I would come home. My grandma would be there. There would be food on the table, which I think was a big support system for her and for me. But I also chose to go to a boarding school after 8th grade. And I have never really followed anything traditional because I realized that you can make your life the way you want because she always told me you can do anything.
Well, your mother was your model, and it seems to have worked well, and I'm glad you shared that story with us, and I appreciate very much hearing from you. Let me hear from some more callers. We go to Paulina. Good morning.
Good morning. So my point, I mean, I really appreciate the study, and it's great for me to hear it, because I was a working mother with my first child. I was a manager. I was managing medical societies. But with my second child, unfortunately, she had a minor health condition that our doctor told us that should improve by the time she's 1. And I had enormous amount of vacation time saved up, but my employer, because I was in a management position, couldn't hold my position for me, for a year. And they basically had to move on. And it was very frustrating for me now that, you know, she's 16 months later, you know, she's doing fine and she's at daycare. But I basically lost my seniority and my management status, and I have to start, you know, pretty much from the beginning again. And it just goes back to the fact that the United States is not providing the support and flexibility to mothers in these kind of circumstances. And I was lucky enough that my husband, you know, has a good career, and I, you know, we were not struggling. But for other women, I just feel for them when they're just, you know, what are they supposed to do in these kind of circumstances? You're pinned against your sick child and your job, and there's nothing that you can do, basically. So it's just, from that perspective, it is very frustrating, and at some point it needs to be addressed, I guess. So that's, you know, my point. And I appreciate the study. It just gives me hope that when I go back to work, you know, my kids are going to be fine. But it is very difficult.
And appreciate your call. Thank you for that, Paulina. Good to hear from you. I want to read a couple of emails here that strike on an important point. Kristen writes, what about mothers who may not work for pay outside the home but volunteer and are very involved in the community? I take issue with Michael's use of the term work ethic. By the way, I didn't make up that term as well, so thank you for the guest for clarifying. I'm currently a stay-at-home mom, but I and other moms like me contribute significantly to our communities, and I don't like to see that undermined. I volunteer weekly at a medical clinic for low-income patients and help organize all kinds of events at my kids' schools, things that some of my working mom counterparts are unable to do or model for their children. And let me follow that up with another online comment from a listener who writes, so my mother didn't have a paid job while I was growing up. She did get elected to the town school board, served on that for years. Today, I'm the president of my school PTA, which I consider to be a legacy of my mother. So let's not forget that there is more to work than traditional paid work. And if I was misunderstood on that, I'm sorry. That is part of the work ethic, going out there and doing things in your community. And I welcome hearing that, and I certainly applaud it. But Sarah Damaski, let's talk about that. I mean, in terms of the study, your thoughts.
I think this is an excellent point, and this is actually why I, at the beginning, said that I was hoping we could move on from our need to kind of go back and forth about what is better than the other, because I think that one of the things that gets lost in these conversations is that there are important things being done in both locations, right? That the work that's being done at home is work. It's often joyful work, but sometimes it's not, right? Sometimes, I mean, definitely, I think very few of us find, vacuuming or cleaning toilets joyful. I think time with children is often joyful, but it can also be monotonous. And I think that culturally, we make a really big deal out of celebrating things like Mother's Day, but when it comes to taking care work, taking the work done in the home seriously, we don't put a lot of weight behind it. And by that, I mean that we don't have policies that let that support care work. They don't have policies that support people who are staying at home. We don't have support for people who are working who might need, as your last caller suggested, to leave for a medical emergency. All of these things suggest that while we kind of talk a good game when Mother's Day rolls around, that overall we don't have a unified way of saying that the work that is being done either by moms who are working or by moms who are staying at home in the home or the dads who are now contributing, as Elizabeth and Kathleen found in their study and other studies have shown, that we don't have a good way of saying that that's important work too, right? We don't do much as a society if we don't have that next generation cared for, right? But we don't do a lot to support and acknowledge that work.
All right, and we'll bring more callers on, and we thank Christina, or Chelsea, thank you for waiting. You're on.
Hi, I was just calling. I think this research is really interesting, but I also think that talking about moms so much and the way that they impact their children's lives really sort of sends home the point that mothering or that parenting is about moms. And I think we need to work a little bit more purposefully to bring talk about dads and co-parenting into the conversation.
Well, I'm glad you did, especially as a father who was very involved in the raising of my children. I appreciate that. And I remember working as the only father in a preschool and being told by the director, Michael, you and the other mothers come here. We're baking cookies. There's many men I know who do this kind of work of what was traditionally often consigned to the ideal of the mother's work and so forth. So please thank you so much for that, Chelsea. And let me bring another caller on, and that's Maria. Welcome.
Hi, Michael. Hi. Thank you for having me. You know, I'm joining this conversation a bit late, but the thing that I am really struck with is that the conversation is very much around two models, it seems to me, and it's as a mother who is very actively engaged with both my family and the workforce and working in high tech, that I think it's really time for us to really do some stretch thinking, to start thinking about how we can create new models in the workforce, providing flexibility, using technology like video, where government also is rethinking their traditional models, and all of us do. And I think that if we are willing to take that leap, truly take it, that we're going to see tremendous rewards in terms of the brain trust that women bring to the workforce, what men contribute to the home, and hopefully that we will have this conversation at a level that isn't so much about roles and about gender, but really about equality, you know, and rising to new levels that perhaps we haven't seen yet, that we could hopefully look for in the future.
A very positive remark, Maria. I thank you for it. I'm glad you brought that perspective to our conversation here. And I want to bring some more comments to the conversation. Here's an online listener who writes, as a working mom of two daughters, I'm excited to hear about the results of this study. There has been some guilt in the back of my mind about working full-time, but I earn more than my husband, so it was never a real question for me whether or not I would go back to work. However, I found I was also much happier working than staying at home, and a happier parent is a better parent. The time I do have with them is quality time that I am genuinely excited having every night and weekend. It can be hard to fit everything in on a daily basis, cleaning, cooking, yard work, exercise, etc., but we make it work together and everyone pitches in, which maybe brings up the whole question, and it's still a big question in the minds of many people. Elizabeth Long Lingo or Kathleen McGinn, I don't know which of you wants to weigh in here, or for that matter, Sarah Damaski, about what we call, I guess, integration between work and the family. And that goes for fathers as well. It's always an ongoing challenge, and there's always the myth that you can have it all and you can do it all, which some women are almost repressed by or oppressed by.
So this is Elizabeth. I'll respond to that first, and I'll let Kathleen and Sarah jump in if they want to. So when I was first pregnant and then had my child, I did try to have it all. So I was working on my PhD all day, or I was staying at home and kind of focusing on my child all day. And then at 12 o'clock when he went to bed, I would then start to work from about 12 to 3, 12 to 4 to try to make it happen. And it was unsustainable. And we began conversations about, wow, how can we start to integrate and really challenge some of these dynamics? Why do I feel compelled to work at night so that I can spend all the time with my child during the day? And we began to discuss and kind of illuminate the trade-offs. Now, flash forward 12 years, our children get to, in our weekly conversations, our daily conversations about how we're going to make it work and home, adventure, life, the emotional roller coasters. We're constantly talking about trade-offs. So for our children, they're hearing that it's not about having it all. They're constantly hearing how we work through those trade-offs on a daily basis in a healthy way. And that's just an essential part of life.
All right. I thank you for those comments. And let me bring some more callers on. Amber, welcome. You're on.
Good morning. I grew up with a home with a working mom who I would describe as a trailblazer. And there was a very positive narrative associated with that. On the other hand, there was a negative narrative. Oftentimes, there was a strain on the relationship between my parents, and there was this expectation that in addition to working full-time, my mom should be making beautiful dinners and packing lunches. And that created a lot of resentment and may, in part, have led to the failure of that relationship. As a working mom today, I struggle with that balance between, you know, really trying to be the kind of stay-at-home mom plus working full-time. How do you deal with that expectation that working moms are not only supposed to work full time, but do all the things that a stay-at-home mom would do as well?
Yeah, very important question. I'm reminded of Arlie Hochschild's work, which I'm sure, Sarah Damaski, you're familiar with. I mean, it turns out that a lot of that, what was originally, I suppose, consigned to women as women's work or thought of as women's work, remains women's work.
Yes, and absolutely, Arlie's work is what comes to mind. This idea of what she coined the second shift that women did who were working full-time at work, and then they would come home and work a second shift of doing the dishes, doing the laundry, taking care of the children at the end of the day. And I would say that there's quite a bit of research that suggests that that has changed to some degree, that Kathleen Gerson has done some really exciting new work with a new generation of young adults looking at their expectations. And she finds that that young men have less of an expectation that their wives are going to come home and take care of all of that, that they have a higher expectation that they'll be pitching in. And women have the same expectation that that they won't be going it alone at home, that they will be having help. But she points out, and others, and myself included, have pointed out that the one of the problems is that as workplaces become more demanding, we see, especially among professionals, and increases in overtime and longer hours, the ability of workers to come home and both kind of give it their all at the end of the day it is becoming more difficult.
Yeah, and Sarah, so, let me, in fact, read an email here, which I think dovetails. A listener named Summer writes, I wish someone would bring up the crushing pressure that is upon most working parents. I believe kids feel the effects of two stressed-out parents that never seem to have enough energy, time, and, well, here in the Bay Area, money to live at this high cost of living. That also has to be factored into, I think, the big picture that we're talking about here, and I'm thankful to that particular listener for sending that in. Let me go to another quick call here. Christina, you're on. Hi.
Hi. Am I on the line?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, this is Christina.
Yes, you're on the air. You're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to just add a comment. Like, I just recently went back to work after 3 years of, you know, trying out being a housewife. It's just that I'm surprised on how many backlash I'm getting from a lot of people for going back to work. You know, we're kind of an affluent family. You know, we don't really need my salary, but for me, it's just like I feel very early in my life to retire, and I still can contribute to society. But you know, just recently, last Saturday, I was in a party, and they went, you know, the only reason you're going back to work is you don't want to take care of your kids.
You got to look for different peer groups, I think, different cohorts, social cohorts. I'm sorry you're getting that backlash, and I'm glad you at least brought your particular circumstances to our attention, and I thank you for that. We are, unfortunately, at the end of the hour. It's been certainly a wide-ranging and, I think, productive discussion. I want to thank our guests, Elizabeth Long Lingo and Kathleen McGinn, who are co-authors of the study Mum's the Word, which is on our website, kqed.org/forum. Elizabeth is assistant teaching professor at Worcester Polytech Institute, and Kathleen McGinn is professor of business administration at the Harvard Business School. Thanks also to Sarah Damaski, assistant professor of labor and employment relations and sociology at Penn State, author of For the Family, How Class and Gender Shape Women's Work. And thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and an hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. And you can continue this discussion online at kqed.org/forum. I want to thank our producers, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, our engagement producer, Amanda Stupai, our engineer, Danny Bringer, and our senior editor, Dan Zoll. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.